Hi there, and welcome to the Engage Customer Podcast, where you'll discover the latest insights, opinions, and trends within the industry.
Today, our guest editor, Jerry Brown, is joined by Martin Stevenson, head of CMT EMEA at Blue Prism. Martin helps clients achieve true digital transformation at scale and pace with in-year ROI. The ecosystem of intelligent automation, which Blue Prism enables, is the key to delivering the reality of transformational change and capability for the digital enterprise.
Well, Martin, good morning. Lovely to talk to you today on what is actually quite a nice day here where I am, so I'm hoping the weather is treating you well as well.
It's not too bad here either. Good morning, Jerry.
Great. Well, that's great. Well, glad to hear that. Well, look, we're going to be talking today about AI and many of the elements around that, and of course, Blue Prism being a key player in this market. But I guess what I wanted to do is start by addressing what I think many people see as the elephant in the room, which is that AI or robots, whatever we want to call them, pose an existential threat to people and their jobs. In other words, the droids are taking over the earth. What do you think about that?
Wow. Yeah, straight in there with the Skynet thing. well, look, I'm a big fan of science fiction, and I think there's been a thread for certainly most of the science fiction I've read over the last goodness knows how many decades, and it's something that started out as a kind of imaginary situation, and now here we are where we've got a lot of what we do in our everyday lives assisted by technology. And some of that is doing technology, and some of that is thinking technology or analyzing technology. We now call that artificial intelligence. But I think about this in terms of evolution, because I was thinking this morning about how we create as humans, and 100 years ago or maybe longer, we'd use a pen to write. If you're an author, you use a pen to write your work down, and if you make an error, you go back and maybe you have to redo the whole page. And then we had the typewriter come along, and that enabled authors to create their work much more quickly, and then we got into correcting typewriters, where if you did make a mistake, you could go back and correct it. And then obviously that transformed into a digital manifestation with word processing and so forth. And now, where we are with that kind of creation mode is you can talk to your computer or to a device. It doesn't even have to be a computer, it can be a device, and it will create the text for you to work on, and all of that is just about kind of speeding up. It's about two things. First of all, speeding up how quickly the author can work, and secondly, freeing up the author to think more broadly and be more creative, and not be worrying about the mechanics of writing stuff down, rewriting a page, the typewriter thing and so forth. You can talk to your device and create your opus through that process. And I think when we talk about let's reframe it and talk about intelligent automation rather than artificial intelligence and robots and stuff, because intelligent automation is a catch-all phrase now. All of these technologies that blend together, artificial intelligence and machine learning and computer vision, the ability of digital devices to read what's on a page of paper or what's on a screen or wherever it might be, and robotic process automation. That's something that we at Blue Prism were, kind of the inventors of many, many years ago. So intelligent automation is really what we're talking about here as a collective, a collection of technologies. But to come back to your original question, are they taking over? Well, not right now. And I think you raise an important issue that we as humans need to spend more time thinking about when we talk about ethics of artificial intelligence. You know, if you're a student of artificial intelligence, this is something that comes up a lot. You know, we need to think about the ethics and the governance that we bring in. You know, that whole area, we need to pay attention to, and we need to get it right. But we're a long way. We've got thinking machines, but we haven't got machines that will make independent decisions without following rules. Where the ethics come in is in the rules. Second part of the question.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just to say, yeah. I think you're right, and I think what you're, you know, I think the reality is that we, that's the way we live our lives anyway, isn't it? We live our lives, we live our lives, you know, based on ethics, based on rules, based on things that we as a collective, I know we don't all follow them all the time as evidenced by what's going on right now with the pandemic, but I think that's a great example. It's a great way of putting it, because without that, as a society, we couldn't carry on. So I can, you know, I can see where, you know, where that's important. So I just wanted to mention that. So thank you. So you were mentioning the second thing.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, we've got to have societal governance and ethics. Otherwise, we have anarchy. And in a similar way, in the digital world, we need to make sure we don't have digital anarchy. And that's right. Why, you know, governance and ethics and so forth is so vitally important. But the question, does it mean that people lose their jobs? No. What it means is that the nature of work changes. And the tasks that people do, like I said in my kind of author analogy, instead of focusing on mechanics of writing things down and then doing the corrections and rewriting and so forth, you know, we've freed up the author to be his or her most creative self. And I think the same is true in the area of work with the impact of intelligent automation and technology more broadly.
Yes, indeed.
It's about freeing up the human to stop doing the things that they're not very good at, you know, and they make errors with. We talk a lot in our world about boredom errors. You know, these are just people doing monotonous robotic work, and they make errors which could, you know, be very impactful. So stop doing the things that we're not very good at. And give the human person, the human being, the opportunity to do the things we're really, really good at, which are communication, decision making, you know, judgment, and creativity. And when we come to the issue of customer experience, we've come some way, but we've got a long way to go in terms of creating a customer experience that is the best it can be, you know, and to a point that I read in the kind of preface to your book, you know, it's about a win-win situation, a win for the customer and a win for the business that's providing the service. You know, that's the goal, and you know, we need to keep trying to get there more quickly. By giving the human, in the context of customer experience, giving the human the ability to react fast, communicate clearly, accurately, first time, serve the need of the customer quickly to their satisfaction, then we get to a state where we can actually bring joy into a customer experience. And I use that word deliberately because that's a word that one of our clients, Bell Canada, talk about their goal, and they celebrate when they achieve it in bringing their customers joy through the customer experience that they deliver. So I think it just changes work. It enhances and enriches the work that we as people do, and you know, we'll just keep evolving as a species in the way that we do work.
And I think it's a great segue into something I wanted to ask you as well. And also, that was an interesting context that you mentioned Bell Canada. I worked for Bell Canada for many years. You may not have known that. And I don't know whether all those years ago, I certainly tried to bring joy, but you're absolutely right. And I'm not being flippant. I think, you know, what you've said is absolutely vital. You know, we talk about when we talk about customer experience, we talk about, you know, people talk about wowing people and all this kind of stuff. Well, I think that's there's a need for that sometimes, but quite often it's just doing the basic stuff. And then you get the reaction, wow, that was easy. I mean, that's what you want to get. Yeah. So I mean, certainly the joy or whatever, how we want to do that, I think is important. But the segue I wanted to mention is that you've published an ebook called The Workforce of the Future. And I think that really nails a lot of the things that you're talking about, and I think brings a lot of substance around the importance of involving everyone in this exercise. As you say, we're not talking about eliminating people, eliminating jobs. We're talking about helping. You know, we're helping customers, we're helping colleagues, we're making that so much easier for everyone. And I know it's still got some places to go. I you know, I'm sure there are people listening, oh, sure, Jerry, yeah, I've been, you should listen to the bot that I was on the other day. Well, we know there's work to do. But I think, you know, when you talk about, as you say, intelligent automation, you've got an intelligent automation platform that I think looks at how we can, irrespective of, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever the industry is, whatever the specific situation is, that can really address that. And I thought maybe you want to talk a little bit about that, and then maybe some of the clients. You mentioned some of the customers. You mentioned Bell Canada as an example, but some of the other customers that, you know, where this has really worked well.
Yeah. Well, maybe we start there and we talk about, you know, some of the great examples of how, you know, the clients that I have the pleasure of working with. And I work in the telco sector in Europe. So I work with companies like Deutsche Telekom, BT, British Telecom, and Telefonica in Spain, Germany, and the UK. And what they all have in common, apart from being telecoms companies, is they're also, they have an obsession with improving and to use the word transform for the first time, that they have an obsession with transforming the customer experience. But they also, in parallel, have an obsession with transforming, you know, the employee experience, and you know, making that the best it can be. And you know, I've got a great example, very current example actually, right here in the UK, of major transformation being delivered, and in almost in a kind of a crisis situation, and. This is with BT Consumer, and as you know, they are the largest, certainly fixed line provider of services in the UK. Also huge in mobile and in broadband and so on, and TV. When I talked about, you know, innovation during a crisis, they've got a super example. So BT Consumer have been on a journey of continuous improvement with the customer experience, and have brought in some great technologies around serving the customer in the channels that they want to be served with, and so forth. So, you know, they've made a number of really important steps, and have been progressively improving their net promoter scores. But they hit a major challenge in the early part of 2020. Which nobody needs reminding, that was the time that COVID-19 really impacted all of our lives in such a dramatic fashion. And the way that hit BT is that they have a problem that their capacity to do work, their staff capacity, almost overnight dropped by 50%. In fact, it hit 50% in April 2020. And that was because their Indian contact center capacity was massively reduced. You may recall India was very badly hit by COVID then as well. But also they had a huge number of UK staff in isolation and off sick. So that was obviously a big problem, 50% reduction in capacity to serve customers. Simultaneously, because businesses, or people, workers had moved to working from home because that's what they were told they had to do, they had this simultaneous spike in traffic, through the network, and also with network faults and network problems and so forth that people were reporting. Obviously, so much more work being done using DT equipment that there were more problems. And so they had this kind of perfect storm of fewer people and, large increase in the demands on them from their customers and the consumers. So they needed to find an alternative way to serve their customers. And one of the things they'd learned through this process of continuous improvement is that customers actually love texting. That's one of the channels that they discovered was really powerful. They'd introduced a service called ProCare, which had got very good feedback from customers. But they also realized they needed to deflect a lot of calls wherever possible to the right channels. You don't deflect and disappoint the customer. You have to deflect and delight the customer, almost in the same process. So they looked at this problem and said, well, look, the way we would solve this huge increase in traffic normally is we'd hire more people, both in the UK and in our India contact center network. But we can't do either. It's not an option. We have to find a different way. And by the way, we can't take 6, 9, 12 months figuring it out and bringing something. We need to do it now, and we need a very, very, very quick turnaround. So what they did was, using a combination of technologies, so first of all, intelligent automation using Blue Prism and the SMS technology, which they knew customers really embraced, and they designed this almost like digital workforce to work alongside the human workers to kind of retool the work that needed to be done. And so using RPA, using SMS, they did things like have the robots update the customers via SMS on what their where they were with their problem. They used the robots to book an OpenReach engineer appointment, if there was a genuine problem. They were already gathering information, network diagnostics and fault management and so forth. And so what they wanted was to arrive at a situation where the agent already knew what the problem was able to immediately, offer the client, offer the customer the opportunity to do everything via text, if that suited them, and a large number did, and provide a much quicker service, well-informed, try to delight the customer in these very, very trying times. And they did that in 3 months. And this is not something you use for 4 or 5 years. This is their contact center network. They were able to kind of retool themselves to be not just as efficient and as effective as they were previously, but actually to improve their service. And this kind of improvement thing, you can say, yeah, well, that sounds great, but how do you know they improved it? Well, BT, as most big companies who have, have contact center and multi-channel communication with their customers, they measure things like NPS scores. Those are independently measured, as you know. So what they saw was that for fault management, they had a 46-point uptick in their NPS score for faults, which is amazing.
Well, especially for something like that, I think. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the good things. Again, I'll just interrupt you briefly because anyone that follows me knows that I haven't been the biggest fan of BT over my writing career. However, that said, and I'm sure there's others out there that may feel the same way, but that said, I experienced what you've been talking about. Interestingly enough, just before lockdown, I'd ordered fiber. We were fortunate enough to have fiber to the premise, so we were able to get that. And, yeah. And of course, the minute lockdown hit, as you point out, the things that needed to be done, both by Openreach and BT, couldn't be done, or they couldn't be done in a timely way. And I certainly experienced this, and you don't know, we did not have this discussion beforehand, so this is the real world stuff. So I was kept abreast. So as you point out, I got regular updates, I got regular SMS messages, and you know, much as I would have liked to have had it in, you know, I knew, well, okay, I realize where we are, and they addressed that very well. And then when there was, I think, sometime towards the summer of 2020, as things began to calm down a little bit, when they were begin able to come out, they said, right, we are going to be able to come out. But again, it was really clear, you know, what the conditions would be, and that they would want, you know, obviously the us to be masked and stay away and all this kind of stuff. But I think that was the thing. And I think what you've hit upon is this is key in any business, certainly important in telco, but any business is this ability to keep people regularly updated. And I think this is where customer experience falls down so often, when, you know, the complaints you see when you're reading newspapers, whatever it happens to be, whether it's the refunds and all of this kind of stuff, the big issue has been we weren't communicated to. And I think this is a really important thing to think about. And, you know, clearly what you've done is described very, very articulately how that has worked. And I think obviously, as you point out, the results of that have been quite spectacular.
Yeah, and I think to your point around, you know, being satisfied, something I love, a little fact that really makes me, you know, gives me a big smile on my face is they survey their customers a lot. Like you, I'm a BT customer, and they surveyed their customers around this service, and 48% of the customers surveyed, and this was as of March this year, 48% of customers surveyed gave BT 10 out of 10. 48% gave 10 out of 10. Yeah. How about that? You know, that's a great, you know, that's great feedback and for them. And, you know, I think what they've achieved is incredible. So much so, actually, that in I think it was around about August, September this year, in the UK Customer Experience Awards, BT Consumer won the award for best use of technology. So, you know, it's not just BT recognizing themselves they've done a good job. You know, the independent bodies who judge all of these things across, you know, all UK businesses, you know, recognize BT as having done the best job. So that's great. That's great for customers. But Jerry, it's not just about customers. It's also about the advisors. And you know, the feedback that BT has given us about what their advisors think about is that they love it. And they love it for three reasons. One, they know what the problem is before the customer gets put through by the IVR. So they can get to the moment of truth much more quickly. And one of the things that frustrates me when I'm talking to service and product providers that I work with over a phone is, you know, it can take several iterations of describing, of first of all, declaring who I am, getting that verified, and then talking about what the problem is, and then having to repeat it again, and then maybe even have to repeat it again. And by that time, I'm 9-10 minutes into the call, and I've had enough already. I am angry, you know. And so being able to speak to somebody immediately who knows what the issue is, you know, there's no wait time. And also the other thing with BT, and this is a telco specific issue, is that I think 2-3 years ago when I was having some broadband issues, I would call and they would finally identify who I was and what the problem was. And then they'd say, we need to run some diagnostics. And then there'd be this kind of awkward silence for a number of minutes while the diagnostics was going on. Now what happens is that immediately the client is calling, the diagnostics are triggered by the digital workers. Yes. You know, so the customer not only knows, sorry, the agent not only knows what the problem is, but they've also run the diagnostics, so they can tell the customer what they're going to do about it. You know, or they can say to the customer, do you want to organize your visit via text. So, you know, it's
impactful
for the agent. You know, sorry.
Well, exactly that. And I was going to say, I think the thing about it is, it's interesting because the customer doesn't realize that. And I think it's good to have this discussion because we start to realize the changes that have been made without us really knowing about it. As you say, I think we've all gone through that, you know, that phone situation where, you know, the diagnostics have been run. But being able to do that ahead of time, you know, having that happen in the background. I mean, this is, another great example. And I think this is kind of what, you talk about the digital worker in, from a Blue Prism perspective. And I think that's a great example of, if you like, a digital worker. And when I've written about AI in the past, I've talked about this, the fact that actually these are colleagues. You know, these are, you know, I wrote an article a few years ago called Connecting the Bots. And it's really about, you know, thinking of these devices, whatever we want to call them, these are colleagues. These are people that work with us. So, you know, I think, you know, that might sound strange. You know, I call it a chatbot called Gladys, but I mean, that's basically it. You know, you sort of say, right, these people are here to help us. And I think clearly that's a great example of you know, certainly in an environment that we can all recognize. You know, this isn't something that happens to a few people. I'm sure everyone out there, whether it's BT or whomever it happens to be, has gone through this. So I think that's a tremendous example. We're sort of getting to the point where I just wanted to ask you, I think probably to sort of, again, I think the one thing about what we've gone through is that, you know, we've got a pretty clear indication with the pandemic how it's helped people. I think that's there hasn't been a lot of good things come out of this, but I think where organizations have had no choice, let's face it, a lot of the technology decisions that have been made have been forced upon people by the pandemic. And I think the fact that this, you know, the example you've given is a great one in the telco world. And I think I know that you cover a range of different areas. But, you know, where do you see the future for this? I mean, we've seen this as a great example. What do you think's next for a BT or a Telefonica or a Bell Canada? Yeah. What do you think that they, I mean, without giving away any trade secrets, what do you think they're going to go next with this?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, I would say to your point about, you know, describing them as colleagues, you're absolutely right. And I think that is where the future is. And I don't base that on, you know, the Blue Prism crystal ball and us imagining what the future will look like. I base that on what our customers like BT, as I said, I can only talk about the telcos in Europe, but, you know, like BT and where they see the future. I think I go back to a conversation I had with one of the senior executives at O2 in the UK, now Virgin Media O2, but we had a philosophical conversation a couple of years ago now, actually, about what the future, what they would look like in the future being 3 to 5 years. And the executive said to me, you know, what do we look like in 3 to 5 years' time from your perspective? And I said, well, look, what I think is this. I think you look like your business architecture is 1/3 people, humans, 1/3 a digital workforce, you know, robots and AI and machine learning and so forth, and 1/3 your new improved transformed OSS, BSS or IT systems. You know, that set you up to do all the things you need to do in the area of customer, of billing, network, and so forth. And he leaned back and sort of stroked his chin and said, that's really what we think. You know, that's how we see ourselves. We think we're going to become a hybrid in terms of our workforce, of systems, of digital workers, and of people. And to go back to your original question around, you know, are they going to take our jobs away? No, you know, the O2 as was would be able to offer a much broader range of services at a much greater scale, with much faster turnaround, with a much higher level of customer satisfaction, and boosting their revenues, but without needing to triple their workforce they'd need to increase their work, their human workforce a bit, but they'd be able to change the nature of work and retool themselves almost, and to free the human to do the stuff that humans are really good at: communication, judgment, decisions, empathy. Really, you know, one of the words that's really hit me between the eyes through 2021 is empathy. You know, people want to have empathy from the businesses that they deal with and the authorities that they deal with, you know, the governments that we deal with. And, you know, I think empathy is really, really important. And that is one of the things that I think we'll be able to do much more with in the future sort of starting now and over the next few years, you know, with this sort of intelligent automation, digital worker powered workforce that is not imaginary. Right. BT already doing it. O2 already doing it. Telefónica Spain already doing it. Deutsche Telekom already doing it. SFR in France already doing it. Wind Tre in Italy already doing it. You know, a lot of businesses are already on this path and trying to do it. So I think it's a fascinating time to be, you know, working with the clients I work with in the telco sector. I'm sure my colleagues who look after the banking and insurance sectors, you know, the government sector and others, will probably have the same kind of, you know, excitement and challenges ahead of them. So great time to be in this world, I think.
I think so, and I think, you know, that was just to finish off. I think, you know, what we've agreed is that A, it makes such a tremendous difference to colleagues, and it gives them the confidence to respond with empathy, because when you know what's happened, when you know what's going on as an advisor, a customer service representative, whatever you want to call them, you can respond with confidence, you know, hopefully, you know, knowing what's going on. It's, as you pointed out, when you go through a lot of things and people clearly don't know, don't have the information in front of them, that's when it gets even more frustrating. And it's unfortunate for the poor people in those situations. But I think, you know, as you say, I think that's what you've created. You've created an environment in which they can operate with a lot more confidence, with a lot more ability, and that's making a huge difference. And I think, you know, Martin, there's so much, you know, I think once you start talking about this, you realize how much there is to it. And it's been a fascinating conversation. I think there's lots we could talk about, and hopefully we'll get a chance to do that again in the future. So I just want to thank you very much for sharing both your view of the world, some great customer stories, and, you know, showing us all how specific organizations that we all depend on have done so much to improve things. And I think the future looks pretty bright. And I think the droids are going to just have to go and find another planet to take over. So.
Thank you, Jerry. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you. And you know, I echo your thoughts in a number of areas that we talked through. Hopefully, we will get the chance to talk again.
I hope so. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye bye.